to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzer. This has been a discussion of the work of the Kenosha Literacy Council, and you can listen again at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page or find us on Facebook. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea. Visit jackandrea.com to shop their exclusive hometown collection, including Kenosha t-shirts, sweatshirts, mugs, books, and more. Jack Andrea, Kenosha's hometown store since 1911.
Supporting WGTD is the Kenosha Symphony, welcoming a sensational 17-year-old violinist, Maya Angelie Buchanan, to their stage for Saturday night's concert, 7:30 at Reuther High School. The program also includes two Mozart symphonies. Tickets available at the door or by going to kenoshasymphony.org.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, come support Kindred Kitties at their annual fundraiser on Sunday, November 5th from 1 to 6 p.m. at the Kenosha Moose Lodge. Tickets are $10 in advance or $15 at the door and include a Mostaccioli dinner. For more, visit kindredkitties.org.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and our topic today is health, community health, and in fact, the Kenosha Community Health Center and its new executive officer, Chief Executive Officer Brent Rafferty. Good morning, Brent.
Glad to be here, Len. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Well, you've been in charge of the Kenosha Community Health Center for 87 days. We're recording this the day before broadcast, so when you're listening to this on the air, he will have been on the job for 88 days, so you probably are approaching the point of maximum confusion at this point. I think I would be. But Kenosha Community Health Center and community health centers in general are a very important part of the health care delivery system in a community, and we're fortunate to have one. Not every community has immediate and quick access to a community health center. What's the most important thing that our listeners need to know about your community health center, Brent?
We're here and we're available to serve people. We provide medical and dental and behavioral services to folks. And I think one of the things that is unique in terms of that delivery of services that this current issue that we see a lot in the marketplace and in the news regards health insurance. And so that's one of the things that we help folks navigate that come in and are our patients. It's one of the ways that we start with them is just helping them to identify how can we control the cost? How can we find a way for you to get access to care that you can afford?
Now, the community health center concept is meant to apply to everyone of every income capacity, and particularly people with some constraints on their income and access to insurance. Is that right? Tell us what the qualifications are for a client to walk in the door. How do I know if I'm qualified to walk in your front door and get care, Brent?
You're qualified.
Because I exist?
You'll need to check your pulse and make sure that you have one. We generally won't take you after that expires, but anytime before that, we'd be happy to serve you, Len. And we do that for a wide range of community members and, socioeconomic situation that you may be in that is causing you difficulty to access care. We want to take a look at that and address that with you. That's one of the key things for us. We do offer a sliding scale where we have some of our patients pay cash based on their income. And so those are folks that are, when we look at, are 200% or below the federal poverty level, which I know is almost meaningless to someone out there, but it's something that's available on the web that you can take a look at. It depends how many members are in your household and what your income is. But as we set folks up for cash pay, one of the issues that we have is we can make it affordable, but there's additional things that folks need, such as referrals to specialists, pharmaceuticals, and so we always work to try to ensure that folks can find some form of insurance that they can afford.
You work closely with the hospital systems in the area?
We work with the hospital systems in that we have a lot of folks in our community that are unnecessarily utilizing care in the hospital because they don't have good primary care support. And so it's one of the reasons why we have the largest costs in the world in terms of what we spend per capita. So we spend about $9,000 per citizen in the United States. Next closest country is $6,000, and it quickly goes down, average industrialized nation, about $4,500 per citizen per year. But again, in the United States, it's $9,000. And a big part of that is what I call unnecessary utilization of care. And that's one of the things that we try to work with hospitals. So if they identify folks that are in a situation where they don't have a primary care doc and it's financially related, then oftentimes they're being referred to us, which we encourage.
Well, what does that mean, unnecessary utilization of care? What action would I take if I were being a bad boy and unnecessarily utilizing care? How do you tell that?
That's interesting that you would put it a bad boy, because that's not the way that I would view it, that it was your behavior, actually. Other than that you weren't going to a doc on a regular basis, I may fault you for that, because I think in terms of being a bad boy, that's one of the key things that you need to do is you need to be responsible for your health and get in and just get checked out so that you're not ending up in the ER because you have something more serious. A lot of times, 5-cent medication is going to put you on a maintenance plan that's going to ensure that you're not ending up in the ER because you have an emergency situation. Now, that's not just a financial drain on the economy as well for the world. And remember, $2 in every $3 spent, all right, is spent by the federal government on health care. $1 in every $5 is spent in the United States is spent on healthcare. So there's this enormous amount of money, and we talk about money a lot. But let's talk about the outcome, too, that you have when you're not well managed and you're not taking good care of yourself and you're not paying attention at all.
So if you're not seeing a physician, perhaps – now, they don't say you should get an annual exam, everybody, and the way they used to. At least there's some guidelines that have changed on that. But you're saying regular periodic visits to a physician, whether it's your – a clinic or some other place.
Find the primary care doctor.
Really, foundational.
It's foundational for our. It's foundational for our. For ourselves, and you're right, it doesn't necessarily result in an every year visit. It's really you need to listen to your primary care doctor. It's going to be very dependent on your specific situation. But as those, I wanted to get away from talking about money and talk about the fact that you were in the ER and the consequences of that. And you can imagine, one of the stories I give when I talk is about a young boy at a baseball game, and his dad is the coach, and it was their first game, dad, and this is a true story, and you asked for a story, I'll tell you. Dad couldn't make the game. Dad was taking Uncle Joe to the urgent treatment center, to the hospital, to the ER, because his diabetes was very unmanaged, and he got to a point where he was sick and he needed to go. So there's more consequences than just financial. This is a drain on our families. It's a stressful situation to be in. Really, we all need to take a look at each other and take care of each other. And so if you're a part of a family and dad doesn't want to go in and get his check, encourage him to do that. It's important. Get in and let's figure out what's going on with you. You may be surprised to find that things are absolutely okay. But I think a lot of times we find folks that are in fear of coming in because they're worried about what would those lab results may say. Because, typically docs like to run some labs the first time that you come in and get a baseline for you to understand where you're at with your care. But just encouraging folks that it's better to get in and handle things on the front end. And that goes for dental as well.
Diabetes is a good example. I would imagine hypertension would be another classic one. I've been on hypertension medication for my blood pressure. It's genetic, runs in my family since I was in my 20s. If that had been gone untreated long enough, I would have ended up with a stroke in an emergency room or who knows what. Right? Is that the point you're
That's
trying to make?
That's the point I'm trying to make.
Right. I think that's very, very valid. Now, there is a dental care option that you just mentioned that's important to people's health, overall health. And we're even learning that your dental care and the circulatory system and your heart are related, believe it or not. And
you're well informed, Glenn. That's true.
Yeah, well, that surprised me when I first learned that. That's not news any longer. So what about dental care in the community, Brent?
So we absolutely want to provide integrated care in the whole approach. So for us, care starts wherever you enter the system. And so we offer dental services as well. We have hygienists and we have dentists on staff We have a pediatrician by the name of Dr. Barta, and pediatric dentist, and just been amazing to watch him work. Once in a while, I end up just kind of sitting behind him and seeing how he handles some of our kids that are less than cooperative. And I'll tell you, this man has a heart of gold because he's so patient and he's so kind with these kids. And it's a really difficult situation. And I'm not saying it always goes well, and it doesn't. And Dr. Barta would tell you that too. Once in a while, there's very little we can do. It can be a very difficult situation. But what we did was we exposed a child in a real positive way, and we never force it with children. It really is what we can accomplish that day based on how they're doing. And so I think as you look for great dental care in the community, that's one of the things that we do very well.
Where is all this care provided, Brent? The Kenosha Community Health Center, where is it located, or do you have more than one location?
Multiple locations, but we do most of our dental work out of our 14th Avenue location. But on 22nd, we also offer medical services and behavioral health services. I'll give you some addresses on those too. But, so a couple locations in town, and you can find them on our website at KenoshaCHC.org.
KenoshaCHC.org?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Stands for Kenosha Community Health Center. KenoshaCHC.org on our website. I'll give you some information in terms of our phone number if you wanted to make an appointment or just call in and figure out your own situation in terms of if you need some help with figuring out financially or signing up for insurance or Medicaid, we'd spend some time with you. We currently have 8 folks on staff that we had gotten qualified in order to assist folks with the federal exchange, which we're moving into open enrollment on November 1st, as you know. And so that's one of the big things happening right now that folks need to be aware of.
Let's talk about the federal and state exchanges and the open enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act. I think that the more detail we give people about that enrollment process and what they should look for and what they should do and what they could do even today ahead of the November 1st date.
So healthcare.gov is up and running. The exchange is functioning. Wisconsin uses the federal exchange in order to provide subsidies to folks on insurance. So those are the people that are, again, we'll get into some numbers that are a little bit harder to see because it kind of depends on your number of family members when you figure out where you fall in on the income level. But they do they still are offering incentives currently for folks that are earning 100% federal poverty level to 400% of federal poverty level. If you fall into that range, then you'll qualify for subsidies. And so it's still a good opportunity for folks to get a discount insurance. It's still in place. And it looks like in the political realm, the current bipartisan bill that's moving forward is aiming to keep those subsidies in play. The CBO came out and said that those if they were to take away those subsidies, that it would actually create a deficit because it would end up putting more folks in need of financial assistance, be a further drain to our national debt. So the bipartisan bill that is in place got a lot of support to keep the subsidies. So it's functioning and it's working. And I think what's surprising is that so many people that use it in the past are actively going to be using it again. We're seeing a lot of trends for positive use there. And one of the things that's come out is you can currently go on to healthcare.gov, and you can even kind of pre-work some of the things and see some of your rates. And that wasn't a requirement, and so there was a lot of discussion about maybe the feds were kind of doing things that were undermining the exchange. But, in that case, I would say that would be the exact opposite.
So in Wisconsin, or what about our listeners in Illinois?
Same, yeah. So when you go to healthcare.gov, the first thing it'll ask you is, what state are you from, and you would just select Illinois or Wisconsin. The site really drives you to exactly what you need to do. It's very easy to use site. If nothing else, I think they've finally gotten. You remember back in the past there was a lot of concern about the site, but they have a very solid platform. It seems I think they'll be successful.
What's the skinny amongst your peers as to how well the site is functioning or expected to function this season?
I think people are optimistic. I think generally we have to understand that we're all in this together, and we want to see a good outcome. And ensuring that folks have access to care is critical for our nation. Because, like we talked about in the beginning, if you don't have good primary care, you're setting your population up to have some really negative health outcomes. And that care, and we carry a lot of that burden. We talked about all those dollars spent, but $1 in $5. and $2 and $3 spent by the federal government, and that's really comes out of our taxes, and so it's a burden on the American people that we have to spend $9,000 per citizen, and so as we improve some of our health outcomes by getting primary care, that can absolutely go down.
So I hear you saying, Brent, that we should not be concerned about all the politics we're hearing on the air, and that we should be going onto the website, healthcare.gov, and did I get that right? And we should register and look at our options and not be concerned that the Affordable Care Act is not going to go away, and we should be registering and not be deterred and not be disappointed.
There's a lot of folks out there that work advocacy significantly, and I appreciate a lot of the work that they do, and I do think that it's important that we are aware and that we're in a discussion on healthcare as a nation. I think that you as an individual citizen should absolutely engage in that discussion. Should you be worried about it? No, I think that worry makes one lose sleep, and I think you should be engaged, and as long as you're engaged, I think we as a nation have some of the greatest people on earth, and that we will come to a solution that's going to work for this country. We've recognized it clearly that it's an issue. That was the purpose of the Affordable Care Act when it came through, was really to look at how can we stop the trend of being the number one spender on healthcare per citizen in the world.
And not number one in outcomes?
Worst in outcomes, almost second to last across every outcome. I'm going to tell you about one outcome that we're good in, but before I do, I would say that, no, at the bottom, diabetes, second to last. So they look at people with they call their HbA1c count, amount of people that, if they have diabetics that are uncontrolled in our country, it's, we're at the absolute bottom. Infant mortalities, we're at the bottom. But where we're best, if you're going to have a heart attack, sir, have it in the United States of America, because there's a very likely chance that you'll survive that heart attack.
We're here this morning with Brent Rafferty, the Chief Executive Officer of the Kenosha Community Health Center, learning a lot about health care locally and nationally, and how relatively easy it is to gain access to the system through the Kenosha Community Health Center, Inc., and their website, kenoshachc.org. Brent, we were talking about the comparative health outcomes across various types of conditions between the United States and other countries. We hear a lot of people saying that we have the best health care in the world in the United States.
It's true, too, though.
But at the same time, you're saying that on objective measures of outcomes compared to other industrialized nations, the outcomes aren't as good. So I think the average person, and including Len, finds that a little confusing. How can both of those things be true at the same time?
I've given some talks at some conferences, for some medical assistant conferences where I get asked the same question, and I had someone say, no, people come from around the world to receive care here because they know it's the best care. And if you really needed something, sir, you would come to America. And I had to agree with her that was absolutely true. The real issue why the costs are so high for us, why we spend so much more, is simply that we're the sickest country in the world. And so that really is what drives those, what we call that unnecessary utilization of care.
Well, that's really depressing. What makes us so sick?
That's a good question, too. It's primarily environmental. It's primarily what's going around us in our lives. It's our social determinants of health that really play a major consideration in our health.
You said something very interesting. You said social determinants of health. Help us unpack what that means.
Sure. So those are the things that because of your situation in life, you may have negative health outcomes simply because of where you live, your family situation, your financial situation, your social situation. Certainly, I would give an example of some of the horrendous situations that folks can be in that absolutely drive negative outcomes, but things such as domestic violence even come up. And so some research shows that folks that have just very negative things that happen to them in childhood, the end result is they end up with negative outcomes on the end and related to health. Part of that you can see in that it's as you have other stressors in life that are more significant than your preventative health. We talked about the importance of preventative health, but it becomes much less important when you don't have food to put on the table and you have other concerns that are more pressing. The type of food that we eat is another major reason for our negative health outcomes. And so we we in America just have a food system that's been developed that the food that's inexpensive is the food that's the worst for you typically. And so that's another reason why we have negative health outcomes.
Well, the United Ways in Wisconsin did some survey work recently. You were not living in Wisconsin when you came to Kenosha, right? So you probably wouldn't have been aware of this. But in Kenosha County, for example, they said that the number of persons with food insecurity and income insecurity, plus those that were in real poverty, came close to about 50% of the population. So I think that dovetails with what you were saying about behaviors and accessibility of the healthier foods. That seems to go make sense. There's some logic there, isn't there?
I believe so, yes. Food security and food – and we often hear the concept of food deserts and people living where there's just simply not access to quality food. And what is accessible within walking distance is food that is actually going to cause people to be sick. And so there's been a lot of folks that have researched and studied. And, you know, it's kind of interesting some of the newer technologies that we have nowadays where they can kind of map out and see in greater detail what's happening in our community. We can start to narrow in and identify where these pockets are. Once you identify those places, though, it's often difficult to resolve. I know certainly in Kenosha, there's been grocery stores that have closed in pockets where they've been needed simply because they financially couldn't stabilize and make it in that market.
I used to shop at the Brass store all the time, just whenever I could, just to be supportive of it. And I was very disappointed to see that have to close. But we can understand those things. Now, we have a very interesting situation here in Kenosha County because we have, as a part of our infrastructure, some very fine outposts of higher education and organizations that are based right here, the University of Wisconsin, Parkside, Carthage College, Gateway Technical College. We have a very strong public school system. There's a lot of possibilities for reach and outreach and research through these educational institutions. There's a lot of research going on and a lot of applied research going on. Do you foresee that the community health center might get engaged with the universities and the colleges in the area?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm so excited that you even mentioned that. We absolutely are. It's going to be centralized. I think the key that you're bringing up is, and I appreciate that you pitched over the softball, is that we have to do this as a community. The only way that we're really going to resolve this problem is by coming together and looking at this from all sides. And so where our local universities and colleges play into this is that certainly in the sense of needs assessment and understanding, a lot of times we get valuable information in understanding our community and its makeup. But also nursing programs, medical programs, dental programs that these schools have. I know we actively seek to have these students come and work for us and be a part of our workforce. And so in that sense, too, we're building the workforce that we need to take care of the population through these facilities.
Now, we were talking a bit ago about comparing the United States to other industrialized nations in terms of expenses for health care and outcomes. And you mentioned that we were really at the bottom in diabetes, and we're at the bottom in infant mortality. We've done a lot of work, a lot of talking, and a lot of good work has been done on infant mortality in this county over the last decade. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that infant mortality thing in comparison to other countries? That's a big concern and has been a big concern in all of southeastern Wisconsin.
The key reason why you have such an issue is we have a lack of prenatal care. In our particular community, there tends to be a shortage of care that's available that's going to provide that entry level service that's needed to mom to make sure that baby is going to be healthy. I think that's one of the we see folks that really enter that care process late in the process, and that's what's disturbing. Obviously, eventually someone generally receives care related to a pregnancy, but on the front end, we're missing opportunity to have a healthy baby. And so, getting mom to come in early and make sure she has access to appropriate care is critical in Kenosha.
Now, that's a place where you can engage the entire community, the faith-based organizations, the schools, everyone. And I imagine you're going to consider, while you're here in Kenosha, some kind of outreach on that basis.
The Women's Health Program is a program that we currently refer out and are looking to internally build resources and to provide those services. So I think for us, one of the key ways that we want to assist is to grow and to expand our ability to care for individuals in that situation. And so mom has healthy baby.
So what do you advise an individual to do as soon as pregnancy is noticed?
Contact your primary care provider. Have a primary care provider. Even when you're pregnant, if you hadn't had a primary care provider in the past, this is an important time for you to set up that relationship. You will probably move on to having a specialist, OBGYN, handle or a midwife handle the early portions of your pregnancy, but you're always going to come back and have discussions with your primary care provider, who will oftentimes take on care of your child as they grow as well, if you're with a family practitioner.
Are there ways in the community that someone could find help if you don't have a primary care provider to find a primary care provider who is accepting new patients? Is there guidance on that?
It's difficult. It's kind of like shopping around. I know one of the things that I typically do before I will propose a business plan for expansion of medical services is I will call every facility in town that offers care to identify whether they would accept me under certain circumstances, whether I was uninsured or whether I had Medicaid. When I came from Lexington, Kentucky, we had 67 different places in our 300,000 person population that provided primary care services, and so when I would call, we would often find that a handful would take Medicaid or uninsured. So it can be really difficult. I can tell you that if you contact Kenosha Community Health Center, that we can line you up with the primary care provider. We have them on staff, and that's what we're here for.
Are there other healthcare conditions that we should be talking about in terms of our outcomes compared with other industrialized nations that we haven't mentioned? We've talked about three so far.
Yeah, there's several. Asthma has also flared up in our country as well. But I guess the one that comes up for me to discuss would be alcohol and opioid abuse. Those are, I think, for our particular areas, the what's been, as we know, that they're the major issues that we're facing. We see that our local governments are responding to that, which we appreciate that they're paying attention. I was very pleased to see that funding has been pushed through the county, and I'm thankful to the county for putting funds into that particular area of behavioral health and opioid abuse and addiction.
What do you think about the latest announcement from the president on this declaring an emergency in this area?
I think it's spot on. I'm glad. I think most of us are that work in the industry appreciate that it gets the true attention that it deserves. And the only reason it doesn't is because we become numb to these things over time, right, that are negative or and we just kind of live with them, but we don't have to live with that here. We can do better in terms of being a healthier population. It's a very difficult one to address in terms of it's very cultural, behavioral in terms of our habits and changing habits. And that can be a monumental task for any individual that seeks to change their habits. And it's a disease that impacts us across social, socioeconomics of where we stand, our status. It impacts the wealthy, it impacts the poor. So if nothing else, shouldn't it bond us in a way in the community that we all have this problem and we're all facing it? We all have family members that are having issues. And so been very supportive of local efforts, local campaigns that we're running, to have folks, ask questions to bring this out. So I think that's an area we could do better.
You think there's enough access to treatment and counseling in the area? Since I know you've only been here since my birthday, August 1st. So
that's my start date.
I appreciate that you decided to help me celebrate my birthday that way.
No, we need more access. And one of the ways that we seek to do that is we're going to be embedding psychotherapists into our team, behavioral health experts, licensed clinical social workers directly into our primary care teams, specifically for individuals that want to address goals, that want to make changes in their life, and just reflecting that behavior change is a major part of the care process. Someone that's diagnosed with diabetes for the first time, they might drive home and say, "You know, I didn't have it before I went to that place," and they really. I'm not exactly even sure what they were talking about, you know. And I think we're looking to add in additional support that addresses the behavioral components and where that plays in for folks in making successful changes that are going to keep them healthy.
I'd like to underscore that the national organization I'm involved with, the involving the behavioral care centers and the neighborhood centers. Strongly believes that the only way that the healthcare system can improve outcomes is for it and the behavioral and the settlement house movements to all work together and create a healthier environment and a continuum of care, education, and supportive services and access, and that the behavioral component is maybe 50% of the equation in many cases. So it's very interesting to see that you're advocating that very progressive and best practice model for us here in Kenosha, and that you're able to take steps budgetarily to accomplish that, because we all know that the best policies at the executive level are lovely, but unless there are budget implications that are executed, it really doesn't matter.
It's really difficult to incorporate integrated care financially into a health center. Around the country, they're all funded differently, and the mechanisms for funding are different. You have to do it, though. You have to find a way. Sometimes it's program revenue where we're billing the insurance company. Sometimes it's grant revenue. But we make it happen. The best place to get those funds, in my opinion, is what we call value-based payments from insurance companies. And so this is where our patients actually end up with lower costs overall, and so the insurance company shares in some of those savings. They actually create a budget for their patients, and if we beat that budget and we're in the right contract, then we can actually receive part of incentivized by that. And that's exactly what integrated care does, is it drives people to have better healthcare outcomes and not have unnecessary utilization of care. So not just the integrated care, putting the behaviors into, we also wrap a case manager around our care teams as well, because 5% of our people have 50% of the cost, they say. And so we were really trying to identify who those individuals are on the front end. We're trying to identify who's high risk. And we wrap a little more resource around them because we know it's so cost effective to do so. And I think as you get in a full model like that, you know, and I don't think anyone has the exact secret sauce for how you do it well. And it always depends on your community and what's happening there. But what you end up finding is that people have much better outcomes. And I think that we see that in our area happening a lot of care facilities. I see that at Aurora, who really is stressing an integrated care model. They're running it very successfully out of Milwaukee. I was very impressed to see, not just because normally community health centers are advancing that type, but we see it at the VA as well. They've adopted and incorporated a great integrated care approach in the way that they process patients too. And it's just because it makes sense and it works. You know, I met a gentleman at a conference, and you know, he was a CFO of a health center here in Appleton, Wisconsin, and he had mentioned that he had met with Medicaid, state Medicaid. And, you know, I said, "Well, how did that meeting go?" You know, it's because we receive a lot of funding through program funds through state Medicaid. And he said to me, he says, "They were very pleased," he said. I said, "Well, why is that?" He goes, "Well, our costs for our patients were a lot less than what he was having for, you know, other folks that were involved with other care providers of care." And so they were very impressed with our health centers, that they were getting good outcomes. He says, "They said, don't worry." He says, "We're going to get you the funding we need. We know that it's cost effective." So that was a secondhand story, so I can't officially state that that's the position of Medicaid to ensure that health centers are funded in the state, but I got the feeling that it's true and that's what they want, because they do. If we put more care around our people in the right places, especially the ones that need it, when we identify early on in that care process that they have social determinants of health that are going to negatively impact those outcomes, and we can put additional mechanisms in place to address those, I think that we do that, and we help people reach their goals of having good health for them and their families.
I'd like to turn the conversation a little bit here with Brent Rafferty, the Chief Executive Officer of the Kenosha Community Health Center, to a little bit about himself and his background, since you're a newcomer to the community. And some you have some really gee whiz statistics about the Kenosha Community Health Center. One of them is that we're the fourth largest federally qualified health center in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that still true?
Yeah. It's still true. From what it was from our 2016 metrics. The feds collect up a lot of data on the health centers in terms of which is publicly available to folks. But yes, we're serving approximately our last report showed 17,600, which is a bit of a dip from where we're at, which is about 20,000. But we'll absolutely be growing and increasing capacity and access for our Kenosha residents. That's the right thing to do, and we can do it, and we can make that happen. So. But when you look at the fact that, you know, roughly maybe 20,000 citizens in our community and that we have about 100,000 in the city and we have about 160,000 in the county, that means in the city, you know, we're probably about 1 in 6 residents that receive services from us, and in the county about 1 in 8. And for us, what that means is that we have the potential maybe – we do, absolutely, to impact the overall health of the community. And if you take into consideration that the patients that we see tend to be the people that are more likely to have the worst outcomes, then we can really impact overall costs that we're spending in our community. You know, one of the things is if they ever did block grant funding to the state, which is one of the things they talk about in terms of how they deliver funds to us, and then they further granted that down to the county and said, hey, this is how much you have. And we, as a county, were able to really reduce those costs and come in under budget and use that money for other things. But not only that, have better health outcomes for the community. I think when you approach it as a community focus, when you say you want to do it together, when you can get the city and the county and everyone to come in line and be integrated in their approach to health, I think that's absolutely a feasible possibility for us to have amazing outcomes, and that if we were to receive funds in that way, that we would absolutely beat our budget.
How do you relate to the Kenosha County Health Department? What's the relationship there? Is there a relationship?
Yeah, HHS and Health Department, we're beginning to get to know. Typically in communities, they will do more of the education, but they'll also attempt to identify ways that specific points or issues that were additional support is needed. So they'll try to wrap their arms in the holes, such as, drug addiction might be one that they go after in a community, but here I'm still getting to know our community. We've got a couple of visits lined up for some of our key talented staff, and right now with Cynthia Johnson, she's in charge of healthcare over at HHS, and so that's, you know, continuing to get to know folks in the community is important for us. Absolutely.
How would you compare the experience you had in Lexington, Kentucky, to Kenosha, and tell us about your experience in Lexington.
Oh, that was fun. I enjoyed it. You know, I spent 10 years in Lexington and working in for a health center, and we began as a part of a health department, which is interesting. We were a department of the health department, and so we broke away after a time and kind of set up shop on our own. It was a rocky time. You know, it was right as the ACA was rolling out. But as a part of that experience, I think what I most enjoyed was I got to experience the full impact of ACA. My first job in a health center was installing the electronic medical record system. And so, you know, our country has pretty much migrated all of us from paper, one of the last industries to do it, you know. And so the result of that, one of the fun results of that is we get this mass amount of data that we get to look at. It's very interesting population health data. It allows us to find gaps for our patients that, you know, if we are having something, if they had a preventative procedure that wasn't completed, they didn't have their pap smear that year, our system would kind of spit that out to us and say, hey, check in with so-and-so, they need to have this done. And so rather than we used to just previously had these folders with paper in them and called a medical record. And I think you might have seen those before, but nowadays you'll see one of these laptops like we have here in the office where our docs walk around with that. So just it was fun to watch that transition that our country went through. It was a major change in our infrastructure and our capabilities as a nation. It was more than just electronic health records. There was a lot of investment that went into technology and infrastructure for health centers and for healthcare that have set us up to have capabilities to where maybe we can start to address some of these some of these issues that we have as a nation with costs.
Where did you get your academic training, Brent?
I attended East Carolina University when I was in the military, in the Army. I finished up an MBA there and in healthcare administration. And then I did some follow-on work with Villanova University, some master's level program training in Lean Six Sigma. And healthcare is just a personal I'm a big believer in things like the Toyota Way, lean processes, just driving waste out of the system. And I think it greatly applies in a place like healthcare where we have, again, some of the highest costs out there. A lot of efficiencies that we can find that are going to improve that.
If you were the czar of healthcare in Wisconsin, what would you do? What were the two or three actions you would take or recommendations you would make to improve healthcare outcomes for our citizens here in Kenosha County and in the state of Wisconsin, Brent?
Well, I'm a big believer in metrics, and I think that's what you have to make them visible to people. If you want to create change, you got to let people know where we're at today and what are the baselines. And so the key metric I think that we should be observing is the cost per person that we're paying. So what do you pay overall for care for that year? So that includes your primary care, emergency room visits, prescriptions. What's the total bill for your insurance company? So as we look at that on average for our citizens, we should be identifying, hey, we're at $10,000. If we can get that to $9,000, that would be great. So $1,000, I guess that's not that much. But when you multiply that times the population of Wisconsin, that's a hefty amount of money that we sure could use in other places.
And, of course, you would align that with outcomes. It's not just about reducing the expense. It's about maintaining or improving the outcomes.
It's funny because you sound like my previous medical director, Dr. Debbie Stanley. If you're out there, I hear you loud and clear. And the same thing I told Debbie would be that, those costs, those are negative outcomes. So you have to understand that those costs are negative outcomes, a big part of it. So much of it is unnecessary utilization of care. That's the bulk of the cost that I'm looking to drive out, what I'm calling waste. And as we drive that out, then those costs come down. But those are the outcomes. We talked about the baseball game and the dad that couldn't make the baseball game because he had to take care of a relative who had an urgent need. So some of those things you don't see as well. We can't measure all the benefits with one single metric, but a lot of times having the one single metric is really what can get you can rally around, you can get people to drive to seek improvement. That's my big thing. If you could only do one thing, I would say make very visible to all of us what we're paying per citizen, and let's watch what happens to that as we take different approaches, as we make different changes. Certainly there's room for secret sauces like ours, where we're trying to wrap integrated care and case management around. We certainly are looking for that as a metric. That's absolutely one of the things I will work with Medicaid on, is asking them for our data in terms of costs for our patients. Because in our world, the costs that we have don't make up all of the costs. So we don't always have visibility on what our patients are paying for surgery or for prescriptions. And so it's as we get to see that number, it helps us come in line and have that metric.
Where do you see the possibility for significant improvement in healthcare outcomes in the United States over the next decade? Which of those kinds of, we talked about diabetes, we talked about coronary, we talked about infant mortality. I don't know what all the other ones are that you had in your mind on your list. Where do you see us having the opportunity to make some big impact, a significant reduction?
The only way I think we're going to make reduction is we really get to some of the things that happen outside of the care that we provide at our clinic. What's going on in the community? What's going on in this individual's life? And so until we have those real discussions with people and we identify that there are barriers to why they're having negative healthcare outcomes, I don't think we'll be successful. And it's about treating people as valuable, which they are. We're all very valuable. And so sometimes we need, even with our patients, we need to help them understand their value because we want them to be around for a bit. And that's a big part of it for us.
My guest this morning has been Brent Rafferty, Chief Executive Officer of the Kenosha Community Health Center. You can get in touch with the Kenosha Community Health Center's website at www.kenoshachc.org and find out how to get access. Thank you very much for being with us this morning, Brent. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta urging you to get informed and get involved.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Jan Swing.